And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, we've hit 50 listeners, so let's get started on this week's edition of the Shamrock Live. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by you guys. You are my co-host today, and every Friday, back to our usual noon spot to talk a little bit about Central Michigan and as much about Ohio State as you want, because this is sort of your show, and I'm here to talk about what you guys want to talk about. So you can jump in the queue, ask a question that way, or put something into the chat, and I'll read it into the show. In an ideal world, I'd call you to the stage, you'd ask a question sort of like this is sane and rational sports radio, and we'll put together the Shamrock Live podcast that way. But we'll go to the chat first from Jeff H., and he wants to know who will align the defense with Bertrand out. I would expect that to be Jack Kaiser at the Mike linebacker this weekend. We saw a little bit of that last week at NC State where Kaiser plays the Mike, but usually that would be with the second wave of the defense where Kaiser would be at the Mike and Sneed would be at the Will. I think we'll have Kaiser at the Mike and Maris Leofau at the Will, and the defense will operate that way. Everyone here is a subscriber to The Athletic, so maybe you saw my story with Jack Kaiser that I did in training camp where I sat down and talked through six plays with him. Incredibly high football IQ. I have no doubt that the defense will operate seamlessly with him at the mic. Maybe against a different, more physical run team, you would lose Bertrand's strength and size in the middle, but I think against Central Michigan, they will be just fine. All right, we're going to the queue. Stephen O is the first to enter into the chat. Stephen O, I just called you to the stage. Go ahead, ask your question.
Yeah. Hi, Pete. Long time subscriber. I guess first time co-host. what would you say is the key stats for Notre Dame to beat Ohio State aside from points and turnover margin?
It's a good question. I mean, the stat that if Notre Dame excelled in it, that would be conducive to them beating Ohio State. I mean, I always found like rushing attempts is pretty high up the list for me. You know, typically when Notre Dame gets to 40, that is a win, you know, even more so than rushing yardage, because it just means you've controlled the tempo of the game better than the opponent did. So rushing attempts is a big one. You know, to Notre Dame's credit this year, red zone defense has actually been good. You know, I know it's three games and NC State actually scored a couple touchdowns in their red zone penetrations. But if they're going to be top 20 in red zone touchdown percentage defense, I think that would really make me feel good about Notre Dame's chances next week, because, you know, that means Ohio State's settling for field goals. I think they'll score against Notre Dame, like they'll move the ball a little bit with those receivers. But that means you eliminated the catastrophic 50-yard Marvin Harrison Jr. touchdown play that you know, that could sort of turn the tide in the way that, I mean, you go back to like the Clemson game, right, in 2020 when Ian Book hit that Avery Davis completion at the end. I know it wasn't a touchdown, but, you know, if you're staying away from those chunk plays, that usually is a sign that your red zone defense was pretty good because you held them to field goals once they got down there. So that would be the biggest, those would be two for me that I always like: rushing attempts, if you can get to 40, and then red zone defense in terms of touchdown percentage. All right, Andrew G., you are next up. Andrew G., you're on stage here on the Shamrock Live. Go ahead with your question.
Awesome. Hey, you know what? Question for you. Do you detect any concern at all from Freeman or Parker with regards to the lack of production from the outside receivers? Have you had a chance to talk about that? Because it seems like the slot receivers and the tight ends are able to get open, but a little concerned about the outside receivers. So just wondered if they've ever addressed that.
They have not addressed that head on, but, you know, you go back to what the Navy game where Great House scores two touchdowns. He's more of a slot. I mean, he could play outside, but he's more of a slot. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Tobias Merriweather and Deion Colsey are not really kicking on yet. You know, Merriweather has, I think, three catches. He had an explosive one last week where he got hawked down by a linebacker who was, I mean, look, Peyton Wilson is legit. I think he ran down Chris Tyree too. But, you know, I think in some ways it's a function of the offense a little bit. And I think it's a function of Sam Hartman where even though at Wake Forest he threw a lot of back shoulder fades, which you would think, right, that's a killer concept for a Merriweather or a Colsey or Jaden Thomas who are outside the numbers. At Notre Dame, he's been much more, I think, between the numbers, and he's not afraid to throw over the middle, which is, you know, where your slot receiver is living mostly. The emergence of Holden Stays last week probably plays a little bit part in that, but I think it gets something. I've written a little bit about this at The Athletic where, like, Notre Dame doesn't have a number one receiver. They have, but they, I think they have like five or six number twos, maybe four or five number twos. And you have a quarterback who can figure out, all right, where's my best matchup with a number two? Where's your number three corner or where's your number three safety? For the most part, those are going to be the guys inside the numbers because you can protect them a little bit more. Whereas your elite corners, your Cam Hart and Ben Morrison are outside the numbers. They're playing your outside receivers. So it would be great if there was a Michael Floyd or a Will Fuller on this team and Sam Hartman could just, like, even A.T. Perry, his number one receiver last year at Wake Forest, is more of an outside the numbers player. No, like, Notre Dame's outside receivers just, they're not as good relative to their position as Tyree and Greathouse in the slot or Stays as a number two receiver or even thrown to the back. So it's not an ideal situation in terms of, like, just the talent at the wide receiver position. But Sam Hartman has sort of made it work. I actually asked him about this specifically on Tuesday night when he came in. And he's like, look, you're just trying to find the spaces in the field where you can get a guy free. And I was like, all right, everyone says that. But then I went, dug into Pro Football Focus to figure out, all right, well, if you're really throwing the guys in space, then Notre Dame's yards after catch should be very high end this year. And it turns out it is off the charts in terms of the pace that they're on. They're on pace for 2,322 yards after catch this season. Last year, or the last 9 years, they averaged about 1,500. So that's just like Sam Hartman is getting the ball to the not only to the receiver who's open, he's getting the ball to the receiver who's open and letting him run onto it and pick up another 10, 15, 20 yards. And I know, you know, Angeli had kind of some inflated yards after catch stats against Tennessee State, but That I think is probably more critical to is the offense functioning than what's the issue with the outside receivers. And I think that the yards after catch that Sam Hartman has been able to produce, and as you look, he's number two in the country in passer rating, that probably speaks more to how the offense is functioning than the lack of production from the outside receivers does. But like I'm with you in the sense that last week at NC State, I think it was in the second quarter, maybe now it might have been the first quarter, Sam Hartman put this beautiful ball over Jaden Thomas's shoulder on the going left, I think, on your TV screen, and it was sort of on the left sideline. Like, that's a play Notre Dame's receivers need to make to help out Sam Hartman. That's sort of one of those, like, where if the outside receivers are going to step up, that's the kind of play they have to make. But I think that, you know, overall, the offense is functioning pretty well, even without that position stepping up. Adam B., go ahead. Are you with your question? And Daniel K., ask that again. Up in there again. But Adam B., you're up.
Yeah. Hey, Pete. Yeah. O-line, frustration, man. A lot of frustration. I think it's the key for us going the distance. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on? Is it Fisher's injury or perceived injury? Is he, obviously, he's not the same. Is it the coaching change going on? Is it play calling? So maybe you can just kind of talk about what your thoughts are
there. Yeah. I feel like the offensive line, and like I want to make sure that my opinion of the offensive line is like, I make it clear, like, I don't think they're playing poorly. I just don't think they're playing as well as their talent would lead you to believe they could play. I think that Rocco Spindler is sort of still getting into the groove of starting at Notre Dame. And that was, it was the first series against NC State where I think it was a nose tackle to his left, came across his face, and then went around his right side and blew up Hartman. Like, that's a play that, like, he needs to block. That's, like, getting beat physically. And, you know, when you asked around about Spindler, why is he not playing? How far away is he? It was much more like the ability to move laterally and pass sets. Like, he can root you out of there as a run blocker, and I think he's done a good job with that. But where Spindler needs to take the next step is, like, seeing where the pressure's come and then physically being able to block it. Fisher, he was better against NC State than he was against Tennessee State. That was a bizarre performance to me. I want to give him one more week before I, like, say, like, all right, Marcus, like, what's up with Blake Fisher? Because I think that, I mean, you remember, like, he missed his entire freshman year except for the first half against Florida State when he played well. And then he comes back in the bowl game, and he was incredible. I thought he was really good all last season, and we just haven't seen him kick on from there. So I don't know if there's an injury that Notre Dame's not letting on, if he's just playing hurt a little bit, but he has not kicked on from where he was last year. I would like to think that, especially the two guards, they started three games total, or six games total, three each, that they couldn't help but improve. You're going to get beat physically sometimes. Like, Zeke Correll gave up a pressure up the middle. Like, that happens. Joel got a holding penalty, which I still don't understand after watching the film. But I just think that the line has so much more to it. And I go back to, if you remember the 2018 season, that was, you had Mustafa, Bars, Eichenberg, Kramer, and Hainsey. I think that was the line. They were really bad at the start of the season. You know, Michigan was good. I get it. They were hard to block. But then Ball State and Vanderbilt, like, they couldn't move the ball. I realized quarterback had a ton to do with that, and Sam Hartman is a much, much different player than Brandon Wimbush was. But game four is really where this should turn on. And if it does, I think we'll see. I just want to see, like, some of it on Saturday. I want to see them move people off the ball. I want to see Spindler pick up pressures, Fisher not get beat to the outside. I don't think Joe Rudolph has anything to do with it in a negative way. I just think that you've got inexperienced guards who are getting up to speed. And then Fisher to me is like one of the big mysteries, because he has a chance to be elite, like, not maybe as good as Joe Walt, but not that far off. And he hasn't played that well so far. So I have a tough time with that one. All right, Daniel K, I'm going to call you back to the stage. Daniel K, you're up with your question on the Shamrock Live.
All right. Thanks, Pete. I'm going to take a page from your podcast performances this week and look ahead, if that's all right.
Okay. Oh, please.
So you've always been good at looking at big picture as it comes to Notre Dame games. And I'm wondering where the home game next week against the Buckeyes ranks in your purview of your time covering the Irish. You know, 05 USC, you had defending national champs, and the Irish were back. That one's always going to be top of the list. But what about in comparison to, say, 2012 Stanford, where Notre Dame was down a little bit? They can't, you know, in terms of the years before, they're 6-0, I think it was, going into that. And you had a bigger name coming. Not that Stanford was, you know, awesome back then, but they were pretty good. You know, or maybe 2020 Clemson or 2018 Michigan, maybe not. You know, where do you see this game kind of falling into the rankings of those big home games over the last 20, 25 years?
I've thought a little bit about that, because it's, you know, the Bush push game, I think, always will, that will be number one, because it was just an insane scene, like before the game, and then the game was nuts too, the green jerseys, all that stuff, like the, you know, Charlie Weiss year one, like, it was just sort of like a renaissance season for Notre Dame, you know, against, I think, what, the defending Heisman Trophy winner and the soon-to-be Heisman Trophy winner and Bush and Leinart. So that's going to be one. I think that you could make an argument that Ohio State could be two, even though Clemson was ranked one when they came in here in 2020. But, like, the scene was obviously dampened. It was COVID, you know, no Trevor Lawrence. I mean, incredible game, great scene afterwards. I often think about, like, what that would have felt like if the stadium was full. Maybe it would have felt a little bit like it did last year. But, you know, last year's Notre Dame team had already, they lost three games at that point. So the stakes weren't the same. One of the things about Ohio State is, I mean, Notre Dame's lost five straight games to Ohio State. And I need to go comb the media guide a little bit. I know that is the longest active losing streak Notre Dame has against anybody. I don't think it's the all-time longest losing streak because of, you know, some of the USC games. But a five-game losing streak, you haven't beat Ohio State since 1936 when you won 7-2. You know, the geographical ramifications of two Midwest schools who like to recruit nationally, the Marcus Freeman storyline. I just think that, like, beating Ohio State would be a statement similar to Clemson in 2020. Maybe it wouldn't have been as big as beating USC in 2005 if that had played out that way. But I think it's an easy argument to put Ohio State number two. Would we adjust it differently if Notre Dame won the game? Like, if Ohio State wins the game, I don't know how big of a moment it would feel afterwards. But I think the run-up to the game is going to feel a lot like Clemson in 2020, where, like, all right, this is your chance to make a statement on a national stage. You had those Georgia losses in 17 and 19 preceding it. I just don't think that there was the animosity towards Clemson as there is to Ohio State. You've got the red in the stadium storyline, which I'll be writing about next week. So, you know, at the high end, number two, but in terms of like top five home games that I've covered, I think it's impossible for me to think that it won't be a top five home game in my 23 seasons on the beat, just based on the stakes, the opponent, the records of both teams, and just like all the extra narratives that go with. All right, Catherine B, you're up, calling you to the stage. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Pete, hope you're doing good. Yeah, so I'm going to join the trend here. I don't think anyone's asked a question about the Fighting Jim McElwains yet. but yeah, so I guess my question is, you seemed a little surprised at just how high Audric Estime's average runs per attempt are this season. Do you think that Audric Estime is capable of being kind of a Hassan Haskins or a Donovan Edwards from next year, from last year when we're looking to play Ohio State next week? Because it's been very much a bell cow running back for both of those teams.
Yeah.
Against Ohio State particularly.
That's a great point. And I hadn't really thought about how to beat Ohio State in terms of the Michigan blueprint, but like Michigan has figured something out, and it's just like you bludgeon them over the head. I think Audric Estime definitely can be that back, you know, where maybe this week he has 14 carries for 75 yards and is out of the game in the third quarter. And then against Ohio State, he's got 25 carries for 157 yards. You know, and then you change Jarian Price and Jeremiah Love later in the game, you know, in the way that Donovan Edwards maybe was a changeup to Blake Corum, you know, at times for Michigan. That would be a good way to do it. I think it gets back to a question earlier about the offensive line, though, because Michigan's offensive line the last couple of years has been better than what Notre Dame's is right now. That doesn't mean that Notre Dame's offensive line can't play great against Ohio State and put that kind of performance together, but they haven't yet. Michigan won the Joe Moore Award, I think, at least in one of those years. I don't think they won it in both. I'll have to check that out. But 100% I agree that there is a blueprint in Ann Arbor about how to beat Ohio State. And I think Notre Dame would be trying to reinvent the wheel if they didn't take some pages from it. Ohio State doesn't like it when you try to beat them over the head. And I think in some ways, Notre Dame tried to do that last year. They just didn't have J.J. McCarthy to then throw the ball over the top when necessary. That, I think, is kind of where, you know, Sam Hartman changes everything for Notre Dame, because he's got a chance to keep Ohio State honest in the way that Tyler Buchner just couldn't. You know, last year there was no reason for Ohio State to respect Notre Dame's passing game in a way. Yeah, Michigan won the Joe Moore Award each of the last 2 years. So there was no reason for Ohio State to respect Notre Dame's run game or pass game last year. There clearly is with Sam Hartman. But you still need the offensive line to set the table for everything. Like every interview Sam Hartman does, he talks about how it all starts up front. He's dead on about it. You need the offensive line to set the table for everything else. And if Notre Dame is really going to have like an elite special season, which means making the college football playoff, and that means going 11-1 at worst, the offensive line has got to show some growth from where they are right now. All right. No questions in the queue, so I'll go to the chat. Hayden A. wants to know, the people need to know, once and for all, did Audric Estime eat a hot dog during the weather delay or not? Reports have been conflicting about who got what snacks and for whom during the delay. Hayden A., you are, I feel like you're a sleeper question on this podcast from my wife, because she has been begging me to write more about Hot Dog Gate all week. She says that's what the people want to know about, so you're proof of concept there for her, but... Look, Audric Estime said he ate a hot dog. And I think there were a lot of hot dogs laying around during the break, hour 45 minutes, probably ate a hot dog. Probably not the only thing he ate either. I was told that Notre Dame's nutrition staff, they had wraps and actual healthy stuff ready to go. They procured it around 8:30 in the morning because they knew the weather delay had the chance to disrupt the game. The hot dogs and pretzels were more for like student managers and support staff. Now, could the players have had some of them? Yes. But I think what Notre Dame was a little ticked off about is this narrative out there, which is fun. And Marcus references the Hollywood story that somehow Notre Dame had no food for its football team. It was completely unprepared and it had to go to the concession stand to get it. That is not the case. But I think Audric Estime definitely had a hot dog. And as someone who coaches youth sports and had a third grade basketball player eat a hot dog on the bench during one of our games last year, the hot dog narrative was crushing to me because I know that my players will think like, oh yeah, you can totally eat hot dogs during athletic events now. It's great. And you might even have an 80-yard run immediately after it. So I think he had a hot dog, but that was not why he had the 80-yard touchdown run. That had a lot more to do with, you know, the fact that he's 230 pounds and running behind Joe Walt and Blake Fisher. All right, Benton M, I'm going to call you to the stage. Next up on the Shamrock Live, you're up. Ask your question.
Yeah, so I have kind of 2 points, both revolving around Coach Parker. I feel like all three games, obviously it's a very small sample size, but I feel like we've seen the ability or the willingness to adjust on the fly. Not saying that didn't happen in years past with Tommy. I mean, he certainly had some fantastic game plans dialed up. I mean, 2020 Clemson comes to mind with a lot of the shifting and motions and different things that they did to kind of get Venables probably trying to figure some different things out to kind of stop us. But I feel like in those years, we kind of maybe just reverted back to, and maybe rightfully so, leaning on teams in the second half opposed to maybe really adjusting to what defenses were doing. Whereas conversely with Parker, especially against NC State, I think we saw a lot of adjustments on the fly, which paid dividends. So I just kind of wanted to see what your thoughts on that are. And then also just a fun quip. I feel like Coach Parker oddly is reminiscent to Jesse Ventura in Predator. And I don't know if his over if his over under on dressing up like that for Halloween, what would you put those odds at?
Ooh, I might have to bring that up to him next week and just see how he feels about the Jesse Ventura Predator. Was that the I Ain't Got Time to Bleed? Was that
absolutely
Jesse Ventura Predator?
Yes. All right. And the Chew comic. So I believe he is a Copenhagen or some kind of tobacco guy.
Yeah,
as well,
I could see that. He's definitely got that that vibe happening. But
absolutely.
I think in terms of your point about him adjusting on the fly, like, I thought last week was the first time he actually had to do it, you know, because I thought Al Golden, the first 2 weeks, you know, the Navy and Tennessee State, they come out, do some different stuff. Notre Dame has to figure it out on the sideline, boom, figure it out, game over. NC State with the 6-3 and outs in the game, and I believe they started the game with three straight 3 and outs, if I'm not mistaken. No, it was two 3 and outs. Then there was a weather delay, the 80-yard touchdown, and it's not like Notre Dame's offense was just like, all right, they're on it. Because then they had two more 3 and outs. So yeah, 3 and out, 3 and out. The Spencer Schrader field goal, which was kind of a funky drive. That was when the Sam Hartman had that, I think it was 16-yard designed run on 3rd and 10. Weather delay, Audric Estime, boom, 80-yard run. But then two more 3 and outs. So it was a weird start to the game, but I love the way that he figured out how to expose North Carolina State's sort of over pursuit at the linebacker position with misdirection and play action. And Al Golden talked a little bit about this week. Like, everyone wants to shut everything down all the time, and that's fine. But he said there are times as a defense coordinator, and I think the same thing is true on offense, but there are times as a defense coordinator where, like, the offense is trying to get you to take the cheese and they want you to try to be perfect on a play to hold it to 0 yards instead of giving up 5 and seeing and just sort of playing your rules, because they know when you adjust and try to be perfect and get more aggressive, they're going to go over your head and it's going to be an explosive play. So I thought Parker's done he did an excellent job last week of adjusting as the game went on. You know, to end with 3 straight touchdown drives before kneeling it out with Angeli at the end to really put a dagger in NC State. And look, while those were short drives, it was 33-yard touchdown drive, a 16-yard touchdown drive, a 54-yard touchdown drive. It's not like they're going the full length of the field there. But to sort of adjust on the fly, you know, you put in the overload with Alt and Fisher together, doing that, you know, getting Stays involved as much as they did. Like, I mean, you think about the Davis Sherwood touchdown. He easily could have just thrown it to Mitchell Evans as well. And that's – keep an eye on the tight end rotation this weekend. I'm not not sure Mitchell Evans is going to factor in as much as he has in the past couple weeks. But, you know, with Holden Stays, you know, coming along, maybe there will be a little bit more 11 personnel with Tyree and Greathouse, and they'll play more of a singular tight end look against Central Michigan. But I think Parker's done a really nice job. You know, it's easy to just steamroll Tennessee State and Navy offensively and have, what was it, 12 Sam Hartman drive start the season, 11 of them were touchdown. Like, that looks great. Didn't look that hard to call plays. Parker had to, like, earn it a little bit more last week, and I thought he did a nice job adjusting on the fly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
If you've got a question, you can hop in the queue and I'll call you to the stage and ask it, but I will look at the chat to see what we've got more questions in. Try John S. here. I know we're technically in the midst of Central Michigan week, but looking ahead, how specifically do you anticipate Notre Dame defends Marvin Harrison Jr.? Do you believe they can take him out of the equation like Indiana did, of all teams? Possible. You know, do you play a safety over the top with Xavier Watts or DJ Brown or Ramon Henderson? But if you remember the game from last year, Emeka Abuka is like a big time player as well. So I don't know if taking him out of the game is... Jackson Smith and Jigba literally got taken out of the game by Brandon Joseph on the sideline. Marvin Harrison Jr. didn't do a whole lot last year. Abuka did. I will be interested to sort of see how they – do they overplay Harrison? Do they have to mix it up? I know a lot of people are concerned about the amount of linebacker blitzes that Al Golden has called and, you know, the effectiveness or ineffectiveness of them. I think that you have to mix it up with Kyle McCord. And I, as much as – how you defend Marvin Harrison is important. I think making sure Kyle McCord doesn't have a clear picture of what's in front of him is like paramount for next week. He's started one road game. It was at Indiana. He was not particularly sharp in it. And I'll be interested to see Ohio State tomorrow, mostly more for their defense because Western Kentucky can score. Youngstown State really can't. I mean, it's like Kyle McCord's one start, I guess a Power 5 team. They were up 10-3 at the half
and won 23-3. McCord finished 20 of 33 for 239. No touchdowns, one interception. Marvin Harrison, two catches, 18 yards. Julian Fleming was a former five-star recruit, 6 for 58. And Ibuka, 3 for 16. Like, if that's Ohio State's box score, I guess Notre Dame wins that game, because they're not going to get held to 3 points. So that is the fact that Ohio State no longer seems to be this like perfect storm of offensive skill talent. You have to give credit to their offensive line. They beat up Notre Dame's defensive front last year and sort of beat Notre Dame the way Notre Dame used to beat a lot of people. Maybe late Brian Kelly era, where they just lean on them and lean on them and lean on them. And eventually the dam would break. That's sort of how Ohio State finished off Indiana. But if Ohio State tries to play that way against Notre Dame, I think Notre Dame wins the game. So yeah, I think it has more to do with how you defend McCord, how you confuse McCord, than necessarily what you're doing with Marvin Harrison, or those two things do sort of sync up. Next up, Nick D from the chat. At what point does Notre Dame start seriously considering letting Hartman and Estime compile statistics toward a Heisman run versus taking them out early to guard against injury and keep them fresh? I would lean very, very hard towards the latter on this. The Heisman stuff, like if Hartman beats Ohio State and he throws for 250 yards and two touchdowns, like that's when your Heisman campaign really starts, when you get a big win like that. Or if Estime runs for 200 yards, like running up your box score against Central Michigan, I don't think does anything for you. And I also would say it's important to remember, like, Ohio State will be the fifth game of a 8-game and 8-week stretch that includes USC and at Duke. Like, it's much more important to keep Hartman and Estime fresh, Estime in particular, than it is to run up the score on somebody for the sake of statistics. So if Hartman beats Ohio State, he will be on the Heisman shortlist. And then if he beats USC against the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, I don't want to say his stats won't matter, because they will have to be good for Notre Dame to win that game. But then you're sort of like letting the Heisman hype come to you, opposed to forcing the issue against Central Michigan on September 16th. Heisman winners in the past, you know, I mean, you've been a Notre Dame fan for a while, you know how many USC quarterbacks have won the Heisman Trophy. They never won it because they ran up the score on Arizona or San Jose State. They won it because they beat Notre Dame at the end of the season. So that's where I think the Hartman Estime, if one of them is going to be a true candidate, you're going to have to probably beat Ohio State and USC to do it. Next from the chat, Michael B. Pete, I know we are all somewhat guilty of this, but does Notre Dame fans care too much about old coaches, especially on Twitter? Seems like we are one of the only fan bases that drags on old coaches like Brian Kelly, Tommy Rees, etc. I think it has been super annoying this year. What are your thoughts? You know, it's like the Brian Kelly stuff, I think, is totally in bounds, and I get it for Notre Dame fans, because he's the head coach and he left Notre Dame because he felt like he couldn't win a national title here. I think most Notre Dame fans would say that's because the recruiting effort was not on par with a national championship roster. So I get it. To me, that is totally different than the Tommy Rees stuff, which I find strange. Tommy Rees played at Notre Dame. He graduated from Notre Dame. He coached for 5 years at Notre Dame. I feel like Tommy Rees put in his time. That was, what, 9 of the previous 12 seasons he was either a Notre Dame player or a Notre Dame offensive coordinator. I think Notre Dame fans have this kind of odd angst with Rees, because he was the guy that was kept Everett Golson on the bench because he wanted to see a more dynamic quarterback than what Rees was. I never really understood that. I think Rees sort of got everything he could out of his talent as a player. I think he's a really good offensive coordinator. But his departure from Notre Dame wasn't about winning a national championship. It was like, I want to learn from the best coach in arguably in college football history. Like, I think we can all understand and appreciate wanting to have a job where you can learn and better yourself as a professional. So I think that Notre Dame fans took a little bit, and I'm saying like global, I'm not saying you in particular, but like the big picture, there was a little too much glee about Alabama being bad offensively last week against Jalen Milroe, or with Jalen Milroe at quarterback. I think this may be on overdrive this week. If you've seen some of the reports, there was a report on CBS Sports that Alabama might be turning to Tyler Buckner as its quarterback this weekend. They'll be irresistible, I think, for some Notre Dame fans. I would advise just like let it go, move on. You know, Buckner left for an opportunity to play because he was going to sit behind Sam Hartman. Rees left to learn from Tommy Rees. But if you want to be infatuated with Brian Kelly at LSU and take delight in their loss to Florida State or what's coming down the pipe for them, like, go for it. I don't think that's weird at all, because his Brian Kelly's departure was pretty acrimonious. But with Reese and Buckner, like, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, I think that if anything, you want Reese to have some success, because it bodes well for Notre Dame when he does. You know, it kind of speaks well to how much career development he actually got at Notre Dame, that he was able to go down and work for Nick Saban and have some success at a place where the offensive coordinators have been, what, like Lane Kiffin, Bill O'Brien, Brian Daboll, like NFL head coaches. You know, for Reese to be in that group, that's a compliment to Notre Dame, not a slight. Whereas with Brian Kelly and LSU, I think it's the other way around. Next up, Mark D. Pete, I think the Irish should handle Central Michigan. The Ohio State game is on my radar. I see Ohio State seeing the Irish as a way to move up in the polls with a quality road win. What concerns do you see from a defensive standpoint against Ohio State? I mean, we talked a little bit about Emeka Buka and Marvin Harrison Jr. Ohio State's run game has not been nearly the butt-kicking force that it was a year ago. You know, Mayan Williams, I remember seeing him pregame against Notre Dame and thinking, like, if you think Audric Estime's lower body is well-built, Mayan Williams is at a different level. I think Travion Henderson has been pretty underwhelming based on the recruiting profile there. Chip Traynham is the other back there. I mean, overall, I just think Ohio State's ground game has been okay. And I think if Notre Dame can keep it as just being okay, then Notre Dame will be in great chances. Like, think about, like, Notre Dame's defensive game plan. They're going to dare Ohio State's quarterback to beat them compared to where they were last year with C.J. Stroud. You are sure not going to dare C.J. Stroud to beat you, because he will. They dared Ohio State's run game to beat them, and ultimately they did in the fourth quarter. But I would much rather have it be set up the way that it is now, where if Notre Dame's front seven rises to the occasion, Kyle McCord, I think, is going to have a hard time finding a whole lot of joy down the field, regardless of who the receivers are. So my concerns are that McCord throws the ball up in a 50-50 proposition and Harrison goes up and gets it over Ben Morrison and it's a 50-yard game, and or Cam Hart, and, you know, the corner stumbles and it's an explosive play. You know, the passing equivalent of Audric Estime's 80-yard run last week. So that's my biggest concern. You know, last year I thought that Notre Dame's defensive line would play a lot better than it did. And they just frankly didn't hold up. They didn't get pressure on Stroud the way that they needed to. Whereas now I think with McCord, you can get pressure on him, but you can also confuse him with coverage. So big game for Al Golden in terms of keeping the Ohio State quarterback off balance. Andrew G, a couple here in the chat, and I can call you to the stage, ask a question, and you can ask it live on the air here. Andrew G, a couple of comments here. It seemed Jared Parker went full Tommy Reese 2022 with two tight ends in the pass game in order to finish off NC State, and I think the lack of production from the outside receivers and the O-line issues are interconnected. Teams will stack the box until Notre Dame makes them pay deep. You're not wrong. I like the idea of Notre Dame making teams pay with Holden Stays and Jaden Greathouse on seam routes and play action. I think there are other ways to make a team pay for stacking the box than throwing the ball back shoulder fades. Not that Notre Dame couldn't do that. It would definitely help if Notre Dame's receivers made the whole field feel like it needed to be defended, opposed to just everything inside the numbers. So I'm with you there to a point, but I just think that the ability to hit the ball deep doesn't have to be just the receivers on the outside. I think it could be Stays in the seam. I think it could be Greathouse in the seam. I don't know if Tyree has speed, like the ability to hit an over-the-shoulder ball to Chris Tyree. I'd almost rather throw that ball to Jaden Greathouse, because I think his ball skills are elite, sort of the ability to make contested catches. So that would be sort of how I see it. I think there are other ways to make teams pay for stacking the box than hit the outside receiver. And look, that's what Jared Parker did to NC State last week, as you mentioned, going full Tommy Reese. Like, tight end play action passes, they're a little bit more obvious to defend when Michael Mayer was the tight end, because you knew what was coming. But that can be real effective with this run game. And then you just need the receivers to chip in a little bit on the outside. So, Andrew G, if we're ever going to beat Ohio State, this is it. It's as simple as scoring 35 points. Oregon, Michigan, and Georgia all had to do that in the past 3 years to beat them. That's a good way to look at it, because I feel like, you know, Georgia's game plan last year, you know, did they have great receiver play? Not really. You know, they had an incredibly experienced quarterback. Notre Dame has one of those. And they had a power run game. Oregon went to Ohio State and won. They had an experienced quarterback, if I'm not mistaken. Good run game. I feel like in a lot of ways, Ohio State is built to match up with like SEC speed schools and to just run by other Big Ten schools not named Michigan than they are to like hang with, you know, a Michigan or the way Notre Dame is currently constructed. So, I mean, 35 points, if Notre Dame is 5 for 5 in the red zone with touchdowns, they can get there. But I say this now, even though Ohio State scored 23 points against Indiana, you know, and then last week against Youngstown State, they scored 35. We'll see what they do against Western Kentucky. I'm with you. 35 points feels like if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to get into the mid-30s to do it. And I think that, look, Notre Dame's averaging, what, 47 points a game? They have the offense to score 5 touchdowns against Ohio State because it's not – Ohio State has a good defense. They're giving up 10 points. We'll see against Western Kentucky. If they shut out Western Kentucky or hold them to a touchdown, I might feel a little differently about Ohio State's defense. All right, I'm going to call Ryan B. to the stage. Ryan B., you're up. Go ahead with your question.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to, like, check kind of what your prediction would be for how long the first-teamers – stay in this weekend against Central Michigan. Would it be more like as long as they did against Navy or as short of amount of time as they were against Tennessee State, just because kind of the fact of you were alluding to earlier that their first bye week's not till the 21st. So just trying to see how fresh they can keep everyone.
If the game goes to plan, then I think Notre Dame would prefer it to feel more like Tennessee State than Navy. So you get the starters out for rest. Like against Navy, could they have pulled Hartman earlier? I mean, obviously they could have. But in game one, you want to give your players some reps, work some things out. In game four, that's not the case anymore. Like the kinks have been worked out, and you're not trying to show anything more than you have to anyhow. So I think in an ideal world, you know, Notre Dame's up 28-0 at halftime. Maybe Hartman plays the first series of the second half, but that's it. So by middle of the third quarter, you've emptied the bench because you have a 5-touchdown lead. And Tennessee State doesn't look, or Central Michigan doesn't look like they're posing much of a threat. This is a week to get your starters out early, less because you don't want to show stuff, and more just because like you got to look at this as an 8-week block of games. And the second half of this block is a hell of a lot harder than the first half. So keeping guys fresh and thinking about, all right, how do I want Audric Estime to feel on, what is it, October 15th? I don't know. I don't have my October Saturdays committed to memory yet. I think it's October 14th. I would spend some time, if I was Notre Dame, thinking about how Audric Estime feels coming out of this game. And how I can sort of keep the carries low. You know, Hartman is maybe less important, but, you know, the running backs, some of the offensive linemen, you know, linebacker, they're suddenly a little bit thin with J.D. Bertrand out. Tight end Holden Stays with Eli Raritan out. We'll see about Mitchell Evans on Saturday. It's worth factoring in the long haul this weekend, I think, if you're Notre Dame. Matthew H. wants to know, through 3 weeks, I'm trying to figure out what's real and what's not. At this point, what do you think you know about this team, and what do you think you don't know? I wrote about this a little bit in my mailbag yesterday. The thing that I think that I know, but I'm not 100% certain, is Sam Hartman makes Notre Dame upset-proof. That doesn't apply to Ohio State, USC, or Clemson, but it applies to Duke, Pittsburgh, Wake Forest, Louisville, and Stanford, where you have a quarterback that is so capable and efficient that you're not going to have games. You're not going to have Stanford or Marshall from last season. So that's something I think is true, but I think I'd like to see Duke or Louisville before I sort of come to that conclusion. The thing that I know the least about, but need to sort of have, and this weekend I don't think it's going to show much of it, is the safety play, which I think is good, but I don't want to get too ahead of myself after last weekend with picks from Watson Brown. And then the offensive line play that we talked about at the top of the show, like the offensive line play has been fine. I just think that it can be so much better than that. And how Notre Dame gets to that end is critical to have a chance against Ohio State and USC when you're going to have to score some real points. So I think that the offensive line, that's sort of my biggest unknown as it relates to the USC game being important. And I think safety play is probably my biggest unknown as it relates more to the USC game when you're going against Caleb Williams. But I think that in terms of Notre Dame's rush offense, that kind of fits into the offensive line. That could be a little bit better. They weren't all that efficient last week, even though they put up some huge numbers. I think I know what they have in Hartman. I also think the defensive line is just pretty good. I think we've seen that through 3 weeks, and I think they'll be pretty good the rest of the season. Might not be great. Howard Cross has flashed some greatness. I think the linebackers are better than, I think, what the fan base waving my hands to signal everyone maybe felt like in the summer. But safety play and offensive line are probably the two spots where I'm just like, feel like I want to see more. Nick D wants to know, what would Notre Dame's recruiting classes look like right now without the current NIL considerations? Marcus Freeman is unbelievably genuine and easy to like. I feel like Notre Dame just missed out on having a dynamic recruiter we have lacked for a generation. It's really frustrating. I think down the stretch last year, as they were finishing off the class, if NIL didn't exist and you singled out Keon Keeley, Peyton Bowen, and Dante Moore, I think one of those guys is on the roster right now. Maybe two guys are on the roster right now, but kind of makes no sense to complain about it. Just it's changed. It's changed everything about recruiting. It's changed how you approach the transfer portal. I think that Notre Dame and NIL have worked together with Sam Hartman to make that happen. How different would you feel about this team if they had a five-star safety or a five-star edge rusher? Probably a lot different, right? You know, somebody asked me about, like, name a Brian Kelly era player to put on this team that would make the most difference. And I realize that Michael Floyd or Will Fuller, or even Quentin Nelson, are the easiest answers. But if you gave me freshman year Aaron Lynch against Michigan State for 12 games, this would be a completely different defense. And somebody like Keon Keeley has had the potential to be like that. I can't say I've really followed his start to Alabama, but I understand the frustration because you feel like you finally have the recruiter that you needed, you know, for the best since Holtz, and then the goalposts moved. And I think, you know, in some ways, Notre Dame is still adapting to, like, how much they want to play the NIL game, how much Marcus Freeman wants to lean into that. I think overall the recruiting has been good, but Marcus Freeman had a chance to make it great. And then NIL sort of threw a wrench in that whole operation. Brian J., Grand Valley is playing Assumption College this weekend for Brian Kelly Bowl 1. Central Michigan is at ND. Notre Dame for Brian Kelly Bowl 2. If the football gods smile on us and give us LSU for Notre Dame for Brian Kelly Bowl 3, where would that storyline rank in your time covering Notre Dame? The idea of Notre Dame playing LSU, like, let's just have fun with it. College football playoff, Notre Dame versus LSU. I'm not sure that the college football world is prepared for it. This will sound weird, but I think that the vibe around that game for Notre Dame fans would feel a little bit like two games that felt the most hostile to me that I've covered in my time on the beat. One is Miami in 2017. And the other one, ironically, is LSU in 2006 when they played in the Sugar Bowl. It was the first Sugar Bowl at Superdome after Katrina. And it was such a hornet's nest in there. There was like this cathartic, we're back, Louisiana. Catherine B., maybe you can hop in and comment on this. But like, Notre Dame has no shot in this game. I knew it at the opening kickoff, if not before, because of how jacked up the LSU fan base was to play that game. That didn't necessarily have a ton to do with Notre Dame and maybe more about the circumstances. But I think the Notre Dame fan base in that kind of game would probably be worth 14 points. Catherine B., I'm going to call you back to the stage. You can give me your opinion on that, what a Notre Dame LSU vibe would feel like this year.
Man, that would be insane. It would just be, well, and the crazy thing is that you bring up 2006, because I think, is it the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl are the two hosts for the semifinals this year?
It could be in the Sugar Bowl.
So it could be in New Orleans again. Yeah, I mean, it'd be a really, really interesting thing. I think that LSU fans, like, haven't necessarily jumped on the We Hate Notre Dame train just because Notre Dame fans hate LSU. But I do think that there'd be a real rallying of the troops, because for LSU to make the playoff this year, then that means that Brian Kelly has somehow managed to beat Georgia in the SEC championship game. Not to mention Alabama, but that's a different – that game will have a different feel this year. But, yeah, so I think that that would be it would be a crazy fun thing. I think that Notre Dame, Sam Hartman would just, unless LSU's cornerbacks get so much better so quickly, then he could just really carve up the team, assuming that the outside receivers could actually catch the football. But yeah, it would be a very intense atmosphere. It'd be awfully fun. I'd love to see it.
I would be all for it as too. I'd be writing my butt off for about a month in advance on that one. The Notre Dame LSU storyline, I guess we'll see if is college football ready for such a thing? We could all take a break from Deion Sanders for Brian Kelly versus Notre Dame and what that would all mean to everybody. We're wrapping up here, but if you got a question, I can call you to the stage and ask it. I'll pull a couple more out of the chat before we wrap up here at 1 o'clock. Robert C. cuts to the point here. Pete, is it more likely we go 2-1 than 1-2 versus the Big Three this year? I still feel like it's 1-2 is more likely than 2-1, but I feel like Notre Dame is more likely to go 9-0 than 8-1 against the other nine games. You know, that would get you to 10-2 on the season, especially if you're beating, you know, if you split Ohio State and USC at home but lose to Clemson on the road. I think that would be unequivocally a very, very good season, a strong year two for Marcus Freeman. The season has started so well. I understand why people would want more. I mean, who doesn't? You know, you want to win all 12 if you can. But I still think, like, USC is built in a way that outscoring them is going to be very, very difficult. Clemson is weirder to me than it was when the season started. I think when the season started, or when we were talking about in the summer when I do that fan survey on The Athletic, it was sort of like rank the games from easiest to hardest. I always said Clemson is the hardest game. You know, I realize they've only played one game, or they played two games, only one game that anyone watched against Duke. Something is a little off there. And it could get totally turned around by the time Notre Dame goes down there, in the same way that Notre Dame totally got it turned around by the time that Clemson came up here last season. I'm sure Clemson fans, when they watch the Marshall game or the Stanford game, are thinking, like, we got this. Like, we ain't gonna lay to throw more than 10 passes and we should be fine. And they got blown off the field. So I don't want to get too far out over my skis on Clemson regressing to the point that it's not a difficult game. But I do think USC has been more explosive than I would have thought. If you watch Zachariah Branch, their freshman, is just a freak punt return, kick return guy on top of a big time receiver. So I think USC is maybe better than what I thought early on. Ohio State is not quite where I thought. Clemson is not quite where I thought. So I think at the beginning of the year, I would have ranked those games, Clemson and Ohio State being the toughest and Clemson being the third. Now I feel like they're sort of more bunched together. So I'm still at 1-2, split the home games, lose on the road to Clemson, and then sweep everything else to get to 10-2 and go to a New Year's Six Bowl. But, man, if you can go 2-1, I mean, especially if you split Ohio State and Clemson, but split Ohio State and USC, win at Clemson, maybe you have a win over the ACC champ and the Big Ten champ, and a close loss against the Pac-12 champ. That's a pretty strong 11-1 that makes you a legit playoff contender. A way that, like, you know, they almost went 11-1 in 2015. But if they had beaten Stanford, that really would have been their only marquee win of the entire season. This Notre Dame has a chance to get two of them, plus Duke on top of that. That might make things a little bit different. But if they look incredible against Ohio State, you can ask me this question, Robert C., on, you know, going into Duke week when I do this from Fairfield Inn in Durham. But for now, I'm at 1-2. So we'll do one last question, and it's from Ryan L. And what's position group needing an upgrade both in teaching and recruiting? It's interesting. I think in recruiting, safety still needs to be upgraded. I think Chris O'Leary has done a good job teaching the material that he has, but needs to do more with getting higher end material on the front end. You know, from the teaching point of view, that's tougher. You know, it's like Al Washington does a good job with Howard Cross, but, like, I think that defensive line needs, you know, more from Burnham, more from Tui Halamaka. Can you get Vernon or Traore to help out down the road? I think he's done a nice job with Onye and Gabe Rubio in the middle. Hopefully Gabe Rubio will be back for Ohio State as expected, but that's a position where, like, they just need to get more out of their defensive ends than what they're getting. You know, the material is there to be, I think, slightly better than where they are. So, you know, recruiting uptick at safety, I think development uptick at defensive line, that would maybe change how we view the defense moving forward. So we'll wrap up on that for this episode of the Shamrock Live. I expect next Friday to be ridiculous as we preview Ohio State. That's going to be a hell of a good time. Hope some of you, if not most of you, will be able to make it in for that game. But until we talk next Friday at noon, appreciate all the questions.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.